We are in the 26th chapter, Perek Vav, we're up to Pasuk Yud Bet, page 172 in our packets. Pasuk Yud Bet, as we're going to see in a few moments, brings us to a person by the name of David, who is with a relative of his, Avishai. Only the two of them, good morning, are together, and going into the camp of Shaul, who has 3,000 soldiers. Fortunately, they're all sleeping extremely soundly, which we said was miraculous. How could all of them be sleeping? They should really be on watch, certainly to protect the king. And David and Avishai easily just walk right in. Avishai, as we mentioned, as mentioned on English on page 171, it says that Avishai ben Tseruya, Avishai was the son of Zeruiah. Zeruiah was David's sister, which is interesting that Avishai is called by the mother's name, and it does not mention her husband's name. But nonetheless, once they get in there...
So Avishai is the brother-in-law of David?
Avishai...
Is that what you said?
Avishai's sister is Zeruiah, and Zeruiah's son is Avishai. All right, Avishai ben Tseruiah.
Where's the source?
What was that?
Where is the source that keeps his sister from? It's not in here.
No. I mean, it's no.
So
I'm not sure.
You wrote
it down in your notes. What? It's on. You can see it on the page 171. It doesn't tell us where he got it from, but it's the commentary in the English, which I underlined with number 6. It says that, but. Doesn't say the source where that's from, but right. This is unusual. It's usually the other way around, but obviously because of her relationship with David, that's why it's mentioned.
It says here in English that Michal was no longer his wife. How can Shaul take her away from her? I mean, I don't understand that.
So the end of the previous parak, which is the basically the very last sentences on page 170 in the Perek of Hey, talked about the idea that once a person is mourned by Malchus, it's like you're dead. You're alive, but you're halachically dead. And therefore, because of that, so David's walking around, but he's not really alive. So Shaul figured, I might as well give Michal to someone else. And we actually mentioned a couple weeks back the greatness of the person that Michal, quote-unquote, married by the name of Paltiel, was someone who, in fact, did not have anything to do with her. They were officially married because he didn't want to rebel against the king, but he realized that it was absolutely wrong, and therefore he never touched her. But that was the feeling that that he had, that because he was mourned by Malchus, he's dead, and once he's dead, he can marry whoever he wants. His wife is a widow. That's the idea. Okay, so here they are, these two people, Avishai and David, in the camp, and they're obviously quietly going. They had the opportunity to kill Shaul. In fact, Avishai really wanted to kill him, as we saw in the Pesuk of Pasuk Ches, told us that. And David said, absolutely not. Do not lay a finger upon him. Do not harm him. Leave him alone. Instead, he instructs him, David instructs Avishai, in Pasuk Yud Aleph, to take two things. To take a chanis, to take the spear, which was right by his head, so that the second that he would wake up, Shaul could grab his spear, and his weapon, and fight. And also, the sapachat hamayim, which Rashi says sapachas is schluchas, a jug of water. For some reason, those two things, we'll talk about the significance of that. But David instructed Avishai to take those two things away, which again, as we'll see, will obviously indicate when he wakes up that his spear's not there, his jug of water's not there. Obviously, someone took it. It's going to be David, as he's going to basically tell Shaul directly, and therefore I could have killed you a second time, and I didn't. Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayikach David es hachonis es sapachas hamayim. So we're going to have to understand this. that even though David and Pasuk Gidal instructed Avishai to take these two things, it was David that took the chanas, the spear, and the jug of water. Mirasho say, Shaul v'yelchulahem. The spear and the water, which was right by Shaul's head, was right nearby, and v'yelchulahem, and they went. The ein roeh, no one that saw, and yodea, no one knew that they were there in the middle of the night. The ein mekid, it was known that arose, woke up. Ki kulam yishenim, all of them were sleeping. Ki, why? Tardemas Hashem nafal aleihem. A tardemas Hashem. Tardema is another form of sleep, but see the Mesudas Sion adds a little bit to it and says the shinamuka, very deep, deep sleep, to the point that not a single person stirred. Strange. 3,000 soldiers. You would certainly think they would have a rotation, as we often find in war. Some people would sleep for an hour and you'd stay on guard. For some reason, every single one of them slept. And the only way that we can possibly explain how was it, it was it must have been Kitar Demas Hashem. Obviously, God intervened to somehow place upon them this slumber, this unbelievable sleep, because otherwise, certainly someone should have been awake. Now, the Radak addresses the question between this pasuk and the pasuk which we ended off with last time, which is, who is the one that was instructed to take the spear? Who is the one who was instructed to take the water? Avisha. But for some reason, when push came to shove, he didn't do it, but rather David himself took the spear. Why? That's the question the Radak asks over here in Pasuk Yud Bet. So he says like this, the Radak, Achar She'amar L'Avishai, after David instructed Avishai to kachna, to take it, Nischarit. He had charata, he had regret. He realized, David did, that maybe it wasn't the best idea to tell Avishai to take a spear, a sharp weapon in his hands. V'lorotza shikar v'Avishai love. He did not want Avishai to get too close to Shaul. Why? Shem lo yuchel lichlosh es Yitzro diaken. Because he may not have been able to be kovish es Yitzro, withhold himself and hold back his desire to kill Shaul. Avishai was so upset. In fact, that's what we saw a few psukim back in Pasuk Ches, that Avishai really said, please let me kill him. One quick hit. He'll die finished. And David said, no, 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 don't do it. You have no right to take away the Mashiach Hashem's life. But David then realized, you know what? If I ask him to take the sword, the spear in his hand, and he's only a few feet away from him, he may lose control for that split second and kill him. So therefore, Lefika Cholach David Ba'atzmo V'lokach Hachonis Ba'atzapachas. Therefore, David felt, I should be the one, I can control myself, and I'm going to take this spear and this pillar, this pitcher of water myself. I'm not going to have anyone else do it. So, the Mefarshim deal with the question of the significance of these two things. Why did they take those particular two things? Maybe he should have taken his pillow, you know, maybe something else, a bottle of wine. Well, what is the significance of water and the significance of the spear? So, when it comes to the Alkut explains that certainly when it comes to the spear, it's pretty obvious, because as soon as the king would wake up, he would grab the spear and kill him. So you want to remove the weapons. Drop your gun, drop your weapons, right? This way he'd be disarmed, and therefore he would no longer be dangerous to David. So he wanted to take away the weapons. That makes sense. But the Alkut asks, what's the purpose of taking this sapachas mayim, this pitcher of water? It's very interesting. It says that Shaul wanted to kill David. Shaul, obviously, on the surface, maybe wasn't the greatest guy. But the truth is, he was Bechir Hashem. He was an individual that was chosen to be the first king of Israel. So obviously he was not a complete Rasha. In fact, we saw before in the Rashi that David called him a tzaddik. That's what it saw. We saw it on the same page if you took him back. So it says the Yalkut, Bivadai hayinizhar shalelech kodem netilos yadayim shachars. Cute. But this is what he says, that certainly, that since, you know, Shaul was a religious guy, the murder thing was his flaw. But everything else, he kept all the other mitzvahs pretty well, including Until you die, you wake up in the morning, you know, chas v'shalom. To murder you, that's okay, but chas v'shalom, not to wash my hands in the morning. So what did he do? He had a negavasser by his bed. You know, he wouldn't even go to the sink in the bathroom in the kitchen. He, you know, it's very machbid, not even to walk dal damos. Ukefi hanira, and therefore, what was David's intention? This is what the Alphat says. His intention was, ze ha'amid shol es sapachas mayim rosh hashav. The reason why he had this pitcher of water by his head was ze kivan David ha'melech lo kacha mimenu es sapachas mayim. That's the reason why he took this water. Today, in order, she'im yis'orer, if he would wake up, lo yochol lirdof acharav mechusar mayim l'tila, he would have to get some water first to wash his hands. And in the meantime, while he's looking for water to wash his hands, then, in the meantime, David would be able to run away. Which is pretty unbelievable, but that's what the Alphat says. Like, what do you mean? I'll make an exception today. I'll kill you today and I won't wash my hands. But that's what the Alphat says. Some also explain the idea is weapons, obviously you need weapons in a battle, but provisions, food is just as important. In fact, it's explained when it came to the Esther Makos that when Hashem did these 10 plagues, it corresponds to the way that a person should conduct themselves in battle, strategic forms of defense. And one is, the first thing you do is dam, blood, which means that all the water turned to blood. You cut off your enemy's water supply. So by removing their water supply, their food, so they get weaker, they're malnourished, they're dehydrated, and they won't be able to fight as effective. They'll end up having to give up because they won't be able to survive. They'll starve to death. So perhaps that's also the message, that when it came to taking, I didn't see this, but taking a weapon, also taking the water, could also be just as effective to win a battle. It's also brought down, as we've seen before, that David understood almost everything about this world. Everything in the world just made sense to him. Everything has a purpose. But there were three things that he just didn't understand. There's three things. Two of them we saw, and the third and final one is actually here. It's not found in the Psukim, but it is here. The first thing that we mentioned, which David did not understand, was shtus, a madman, someone who's insane, crazy. Why would God create such people in this world? And we saw that when he was fleeing from Shaul, he went to a city by the name of Gath, and there was Philistines there, the Plishtim lived there. And they would have killed him. After all, he was one that killed many, many Plishtim in his lifetime. But he acted insane. He acted crazy when he went there. And when people looked at him, they said, this can't be the same David. Or they felt, even if this is David, what's the point of harming him? He's harmless, you know, he's crazy. So then he realized the purpose of insanity. Because if there was no insanity in this world, then he would not have been able to act that way, because there would be no such thing of it. The second, as we mentioned before, was when he was in En Gedi, hiding in a cave from Shaul, and he always wondered what's the purpose, the significance of the spider. And the spider created this web, which when Shaul walked by, he realized there's absolutely no way someone could have been in there, because how could have this web been formed? So he went in there, was vulnerable, and that's when David snipped his garment. The third is actually in this situation. He did not understand the significance, the purpose of a tzira, of a hornet, a bug, an insect. What's the purpose of insects? Some of them may have various benefits, but he didn't understand the significance of a specific bug. He said, what's the purpose of it? I don't understand. So it happened, again, this is not found in the Psukim, that he was going into this camp, and he was with his relative Avishai, and he was quietly trying to get to Shaul, trying to get to that sphere, trying to get to that pitcher of water. And he went and went close, and there was a person, as we're going to see, by the name of Avner, who was very close to Shaul. His purpose was to obviously protect the king at all costs, and therefore he was always very close by. And his feet were up, and as the Mefarshim explained, when David was getting closer and closer to Shaul, he had to kind of step over one foot to be able to get to Shaul, who was inside. And as he stepped above or between the feet of Avner, Chazal tell us that Avner's feet dropped, as though like in a wrestling move, was like he was like in a scissor. He was trapped. He was stuck between the feet of Avner. So there was David with 3,000 soldiers, and Avner is there, wrapping with his feet wrapped around David, and Avner fortunately is sleeping. But what am I going to do? Here I am. I'm stuck. If I say, excuse me, Avner, could you wake up a second? I'm stuck over here. He'll die. He'll be killed on the spot. So what was he going to do? There's nothing he can do. But fortunately, Chazal tell us, there was a tzira. There was a little fly. And that fly, that bug, landed on Avner. And because it landed on his feet, it caused him to stir for a moment, and he was able to be free from this scissor hold. And therefore, Chazal tell us, now I understand the reason for the shtus, why there's people who are foolish or madmen, the tzira, the fly, and achish, and the spike. So that's what some said. But the idea behind it, of course, is that everything has its purpose in this world. Sometimes it's easier to find. Some of them are more obvious. But there's nothing in this world which does not have its purpose. And therefore, I think it's an important lesson, certainly for people, that we should not ever feel worthless. We should always feel, certainly, that we have tremendous value that we can offer to this world. And therefore, you have to sometimes find it, just like David had to find it for those three things. Okay, let's move on. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Pasuk Yud Gimel tells us, "Vayavor David ha'aver v'yamod al rosh ha'har mirachok." So David and Avishai traveled away from this encampment of Shaul, and they stood al rosh ha'har mirachok, on the top of a mountain, which means they climbed up a mountain. And they were very far away. Ram Hamoka Binehem. There was quite a significant difference of space between them. Right. And if we look in the Masudas David, Al Rosh Ahar, why was he standing on the top of a mountain? Why do we need to know exactly his precise location? Right? So the Masudas David says, Lashmiya Kolom Lemiracho, because he's going to, in a few seconds, wake up every single one of those soldiers, especially Avner and Shaul the king. So being on a higher location and shouting down, the form of echoing, whatnot, that's what will his voice will amplify, it'll be louder. So that's one explanation. The other idea behind it, in addition to that, the Masudas Dov continues and says, Rav Hamakom, Ki Pachad Lanasho Shlo Yispesu, that he had concern, he was afraid that he would be captured. So the fact that he would be far away, and not only be far away in distance, but to be on a high incline, so even if, let's say, they had horses and chariots and whatnot, they wouldn't necessarily be able to climb up this very jagged, steep mountain. So therefore, this was strategically an easy way for him to get away in a moment's notice and to be safe. Okay. So what did he do on the top of this mountain? Pasuk Gedal tells us. Vayikra David el ha'am vel Avner ben Ner lemon. So David called out to the nation, to these soldiers, and also to Avner ben Ner. And he said, Hello, Tana Avner. Avner, aren't you going to answer me? Aren't you listening to me? Now Avner was sound asleep. Now, obviously, he's going to be screaming on the top of his lungs. Hopefully, that will wake him up. And it did. Vayan Avner, and Avner answered him. Vayomer said, Mi'ata, who do you think you are? Karas el Amelach, to speak to the king in such a way. How could you speak in such a way? Which sounds like on the surface as you're being disrespectful in the words, your choice of words. Masudas David tells us something even more. It's not good to wake up someone who is sleeping. It's probably even worse to wake up a king who is sleeping. Masudas David says, Mi'ata, who do you think you are? Rasul Amr, Eich Malcha Libcha, How could you have this idea within your heart, likroa b'kol al hamelech, to start screaming at my king, lakitzo mishinaso, waking him up from his slumber? How can you wake him up? He's in the middle, he needs his beauty sleep, he needs his rest, and there you are waking him up. How dare you do such a thing? Radak gives us a little bit more of a hint of what's going on over here, this dialogue between David and Avner, toward the bottom of the page, which was not underlined. The Radak says, "Halo Tana Avner, Acher Shikara El Am Vel Avner." After David was screaming to Avner, "Halo Hayonim," also no one was answering him because they're still sleeping. Kara Od El Avner, he called again, once again. So he kept screaming, repeating over and over and over, "Get up, get up, get up." Then it says, middle of the next line, the Medrash Tehillim, Amr lo David, ma yeshuchol anos Avner, hari amarta al hamara. It said that Avner felt, when it came to the cave, the episode of in Gedeon where the garment was snipped, I don't believe that was the case. Avner did not believe David, that he was in the cave with Shaul. He did not believe that he had a knife and he had the opportunity to kill him, and instead he just decided to rip his garment. It made no sense to Avner. Now this is what Avner would say. Ilu hoya osem uma hainu nechnosem usham mechatkanoso eber eber. I don't believe that you're in the cave, because if you were there, you would have torn and cut up my king to ribbons. You would have cut him up to pieces. I do not believe that you were there. And therefore, as we're going to see in the next psukim, and the Radak continues and says, Oshema, possibly you can say, Hachanes masapachas ma yeshucha la'anos halotan avner. Isn't it possible that really I could have killed him in the cave? You think I wasn't there? You think I didn't intend to kill him? It's not true. And to prove that to you, where's your king's spear? Where is your king's jug of water? Silent. No answer. Lo hayochol anos davar benasa keilim. The reason why he was quiet initially was not because he was really sleeping. Radak says because he was silenced. He had no response. He had no answer. Because Avner all along thought that David would, any opportunity, he would kill my king, he would kill Shaul. The garment that was ripped, he probably found that garment. It was, my king was, you know, in the cave. He was all over the place. Probably a thorn came and tore the garment, and he found it later. And he pretended as though he was the one that ripped it. Now the truth is that must be the case, that David was the one that ripped it, because otherwise, where is my spear? Where is my pitcher of water? Therefore, we find again that that's a proof that Avner was silenced. And therefore he kept provoking him in Pasuk Yud-Aleph, saying, "What do you mean? What do you mean where, you know, that I didn't want to kill, that I would have killed him?" And in fact he was silenced. Which some further explain that based on the words of the Radak and the Mesudas David combined, that Avner, what are you concerned of? What's your fear? You're upset at me for what? That I woke your king up from his beauty sleep? You're so concerned about your king's sleep, but you're not concerned about your king's life, because I could have killed him. So here you are complaining, I woke you, I woke up the king. Who cares? I could have killed the king. Pasuk Tezva, page 174. Ve'yomer David el Avner, halo ish ata. David said to Avner, aren't you a man? Are you a man or a mouse? That's what it sounds like. Hello, ish ata. Ish, the Mesudas Sion translated as gadol v'chashuv. Aren't you supposed to be a big shot? You're supposed to be an important person. You mean kamocha b'Yisrael, and there's no one equal to you among all the b'nei Yisrael. V'lama lo shamarta. Why did you not protect your king? Al-Danech HaMelech, your master the king, you didn't protect him. You were there sleeping, and I know I saw you sleeping. Your legs were wrapped around me, and you were sound asleep. You should have been watching the king. You shouldn't be focused on yourself. One person from the nation could come And I am one person from that nation that did come, and I could have easily, I could have killed, destroyed, assassinated the king. So what type of person are you? You think you're such an important person? You think you're a god of the chashuv? You're not even protecting your king. Pasuk Tezayin. Lo tova dabar zeh asher asisa. It's not good the things that you're doing. You're not really doing such a great job, Avner. Chai Hashem, swear, ki b'nei moves atem. You people deserve to die. Asher lo shamartem al adonechem al Mashiach Hashem. Because you did not protect your master, the anointed one of Hashem. You didn't protect the king. Shol. Yatah now, A, C. A, chanias hamelech. Where is the king's spear? Ve'asapacha samayim Hashem rasho sav. And that jug of water, that flask of water that was by his head. Where is it? It's not there anymore. Do you know why? Because I have it. Mesudas Sion says, what do you mean, b'nei maves? Anshei maves ratzulam rechaybi misa. They should deserve to die. And it's logical. Because the king, his life could have been taken away, and that's your whole job, is to preserve the life of the king. So since you didn't do that very simple task, therefore, you're chai misa. You showed a complete lack of respect to the king and his life, and therefore, because of this, your life, you will be killed. You should be sentenced to death for that. You're the one that's chai misa. The Sudas David over here says, "Re'ei echanis, where is the spear?" Ratzalim is the same. V'im tamer shemartim. Because if you want to somehow say, "What are you talking about? I am good. I am the ish. I am a good person. I'm a good bodyguard and security guard." So it says, Mesudas David, if that's true, Eichanis, where is this spear? Obviously, you're not such a great bodyguard. They walked right over you, right by you, and you didn't protect your king. Pasuk Zion. But Yaker Shaul as Kol David. The king doesn't even call him the king, but we'll see how David responds to him. The king, Shaul, the king, heard David's voice. But Yomri said, "Hakol chazeh b'ni David." Interesting language. Is this the voice of my son? Because it is his son-in-law. At least it was his son-in-law at one point. Is this my son David's voice? My son that I love so much. V'yomer David, and David said, interesting language, Koli, it's my voice, Adoni HaMelech. And how does he call him? He calls him a king, and he calls him Adoni. Right? You're my master. Right? So he still shows this tremendous amount of respect, which is pretty unbelievable. Pasuk Yudches, V'yomer, he said, Lomaze Adoni Rodif Achrei Abdo. David said, what are you doing? We've had this conversation more than once. Why are you pursuing me? Why do you keep chasing after your Eved, your lowly servant? Kimea Sisi. What did I do? Uma biyadi ra. What in my hand is so bad? If you're upset at anyone, you should be upset at Avner. He's not even protecting you. You're upset at me? What did I do wrong? Why do you keep chasing after me? The Akan now, Yishma na Adoni HaMelech, please, listen to me. Es Dibri Abdo, please listen to the words of your lowly servant. Im Hashem hasisischa bi, if Hashem is the one that has incited you against me, that Hashem is the one that's given you this desire to want to harm me, then yarech mincha, then let me offer some type of sacrifice. I'll bring an offering to God. And that'll be a rech nichoach. It'll be a nice sacrifice, and God will look more favorably toward me, and then in turn, He won't give you these ill feelings about me. So if that's what it is, then I can just take care of it myself. V'im b'nei adam. But if it's people that are spreading rumors, that are saying pretty nasty things about me, then arurim him with Hashem. Those people are arur. Those people should be cursed before God. Ki gershuni, why? What did they do that's so bad by speaking ill about me to you? Because look at how I've been conducting my life. Ki gershuni hayom. Because I've been cast away A gerusha also means like a divorce, someone who's removed, sent away. Ki gershuni hayom, because I've been driven away. May his tapeach benachas Hashem, his tapeach, Mesudas Sion translates as being dobluk, nasifas dover el dover, from attaching and coming close to the nachas Hashem, the inheritance of God, which corresponds to living in Israel. Way more to say, lech avod Elohim acherim. You're supposed to say the word Elohim, because it's referring to God, a God, lowercase g. Elohim acherim, worshipping idols. So here I am, I'm unable to live in Eretz Israel, where I want to live, and be able to serve Hashem as a good Jewish boy should. Instead, I'm running around outside of Israel, and I am going and worshipping Elohim acherim. I'm an idol worshipper. David's an idol worshipper? Where on earth do we find any mention of David being an idol worshipper? So over here, we have a very interesting Rashi. Rashi tells us as follows. When it says, Ki gershuni, I've been driven away. Rashi says it means Me'eretz Yisrael, as we explained, that he cannot live in Israel. Now listen to this unbelievable Rashi, which is toward the very end of the Talmud and Ksubot. Rashi says that now I, David, am going and serving Elohim Acherim, gods of others. I was always told, you're not allowed to translate Elohim Acherim as other gods, because there are no other gods, there's only one God. So Elohim Acherim is supposed to be translated gods of others, which people perceive to be as gods, but of course they're not. Rashi says like this, where was David worshipping an idol? All he did was step foot out of Israel, and he was running all over the world. Listen to this Rashi. Hayotzi me'eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz, a person who leaves Israel and lives outside thereof in the diaspora, bizman abayis, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, ki'ilu oved avodas galilin. You're like an idol worshipper. A person who lives outside of Israel, what we learn out from here, we derive from the words of David, is that you're an idol worshipper. If you do not live in Eretz Israel. Right. The key words of this Rashi, right, before we start questioning our residence where we live, is exactly the words Bizman Habayis, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash. And just to read for a moment exactly that idea, which is exactly how Rashi says, the significance of this. He says like this, Mashma Shekol Zadin, the whole time that we say a person should not leave Israel. It's interesting, it doesn't say someone who lives outside of Israel. It says someone who was in it and left it. Which means maybe even in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, if you were never there, it's not as bad as living there and then making a choice to move out of it. But he says like this, that is only Bizman Sheb Eretz Yisrael Hayoshim Ba Yoram B'Shalem. It's only a time in which Israel was filled with people who are Yerushimayim, God-fearing people, and people who are shalim, complete, good, wholesome individuals. What choice are you making for whatever reason? I'm leaving those good people, this healthy environment, and I'm going to live with a bunch of idol worshippers, people who are corrupt, people who do things which are wrong. That is someone who is, you yourself aren't considered to be an idol worshipper. What do you mean, I never worship an idol? First of all, we're influenced by our environment. So therefore, the fact that you're going to be living among Oyvdei Avodah Zarah, you'll realize after 5-10 years that somehow you fit in pretty well there. You might end up becoming an idol worshipper yourself. And also, the fact that you make this choice of choosing this group as opposed to that group, it kind of shows, based on who your friends are, can sometimes get a picture of the person themselves. If you want to figure out who you are as a person, sometimes it's hard to be critical about yourself. You look at who you associate yourself with, who you're friendly with, that sometimes is a reflection on who you are. And therefore, if you're hanging out with people who are idol worshippers, maybe you're not so much better. He says, but that's only in those days. However, now, lo shaykh din zeh. This law doesn't apply at all. We don't have to We don't have to start packing our bags to go to Israel just yet. Hinigam Rashi Barod Sifrei Hanaviim, almost throughout all of Navi, whenever this Chazal is mentioned, other than in this particular place, it says Hayotzim Eretz Yisrael Lichotz Aretz Bizman Shveitz Mikdash Kayim, the time of the Bizman Habayis, the time where the Beis Mikdash stood. Mashma Shadaf Bizman Shveitz Mikdash, only when the Beis Mikdash was there, Kishashchina Hayotzim Eretz Yisrael. Because you have a closer connection to Hashem, because Hashem's Shechina resides in the Beis Hamikdash. Oz ha'yahadar b'Eretz Yisrael nechshav k'mi she'eshu eloka. Therefore, if you live in Israel, it's like you have a God, because God is more readily seen. And therefore, mishadar b'chutz la'aretz, one who lives out of that area, it's k'mi she'enu eloka. It's like you do not have a God. Sheminiach makom ha'shechina b'holach nemenim, because you are moving away from godliness and spirituality.
But
yeah,
it didn't have a
Beis
HaMikdash. So why did they say
it's
David? Why was this
pasuk
put here?
So there was no Beis HaMikdash yet. David didn't build the Beis HaMikdash. His son did.
Unless they're talking about the Mishkan.
Oh, that could be. That could certainly be the Mishkan. It also. That's probably the best answer. I need to think about that. I was thinking of it says that nowadays where there's no Beis HaMikdash, what we have is a Mikdash Ma'at, which could be likened to a Beit Hakneses, a Beit Medrash, study halls, shuls, as well as our own homes. We can elevate it to the level of the Beis HaMikdash. We can take our shulchan that we eat from, and that could be comparable to the actual shulchan in the Mishkan. And therefore, it's the same idea. You could say that Eretz Yisrael, we are in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the shul. Eretz Yisrael represents spirituality. That's what Eretz Yisrael equals. And therefore, a person could go to Chutz La'aretz in order to run away from God, right? So they don't have to deal with Him. Or a person could live in Eretz Yisrael and still distance themselves away from God. It's your choice. Even in Israel, you can have that problem. So if you're living outside of Israel, but you make the choice, maybe more difficult, but a choice to associate yourself with spiritual matters, that's considered like you've never left Eretz Israel, because it's the same idea. It's in order to improve and perfect oneself spiritually. But you're right, because otherwise there's no Beis HaMikdash. It's interesting that's what it sounds like. The reading of Rashi is Bizman Habayis. That it means the Beis HaMikdash. There's no Beis HaMikdash yet.
I think I heard you say something about that it doesn't apply because the Beis HaMikdash is not there, Shechina.
Right.
But we do believe that the Shechina is much stronger in Israel than this Chutz La'aretz.
True.
That's a given as far as I know.
But at the same time, even in Yerushalayim, on the Seder night, they say Lashana Haba Yerushalayim, because they're still missing. They're still in Galus. Even if you're living two steps away from the Kotel, we're still lacking the Beis HaMikdash. The level of the Shechina, the level of Hashem's presence, is still not as great as it could be, even there.
That's true, but it's greater than Chutz La'aretz.
That's true.
That was a very good explanation that you gave for us. That
was
very good.
I have to rationalize it for myself, right?
Very good.
How else am I going to rationalize it? I have to. There has to be some logical answer. Right. But nowadays, living in Israel, certainly it's easier. It could potentially be easier for a person to practice as a Jew.
But there are people, the majority, who have made the choice not to.
Right. Even there. Right. So it's not just. Right. Right. In fact, it's brought down a mashal that if you have, let's say, a palace, and you have a king that gives you specific rules, and there's a large country. You live in the capital city, where the palace is, where the king lives, and you live right next door. You just happen to have a house right next door to the palace. And you break his rules, right? And you're right in front of his face. So you have that guy, and you have another person who lives on the other side of the country that does the exact same things wrong. He's really, on the surface, no worse than you, because he does the same things wrong. But there's no comparison. Doing something wrong in front of the face of the king as opposed to being done behind his back. So some say that Eretz Yisrael is like a double-edged sword, that certainly a person could go to Eretz Yisrael and elevate themselves to the greatest of heights, However, in the event that a person realizes that they themselves may not adhere to the mitzvahs as they should, what place is it better to be? To break those rules in front of the king, or behind his back, so to speak? Of course, God is everywhere. But to do it in Eretz Yisrael, to live there, we're held on a higher level. We're held more accountable for our actions. So therefore, what was that?
Well, some of the population, not everybody.
Some of the more secular Jewish people in Israel, they are certainly more traditional than we find people who live, let's say, in the United States, who have absolutely no knowledge whatsoever. They're completely secularized, who have no, very, very, very minimal background and knowledge. Okay. Anyway, so that's one. That was one idea. It's also explained that actually we can see this instead of looking in Hebrew again on page 175. What David said was not so good. David said something which kind of got into a lot of trouble for. If you look on the left side where it's on Pasuk 19, it says, there's a Gemara in Brachos on Samach Beis Amud Beis that says that they fault David for this disrespectful reference to Hashem as an insider. He said, maybe it's Hashem that caused you to go against me, which means Hashem is the one that's programming this person to hate me. And it says that he was later punished when Hashem allowed Satan to incite him to perform a census through a head count, a means that the Torah forbids, and which caused the nation to be stricken with a plague. So even the most simplistic law, which even little children should be familiar with, that we do not count Jews, right? We do not limit a person to a number. You are three, you are four, because every human being has endless potential. And David counted the Jewish people, which for that, in Shmuel Bet, we will see later on, there was a plague upon the Klal Yisrael because of this mistake. And this was a punishment. Because you showed the lack of respect to Hashem by saying these words, therefore in turn, you stumbled later on in your life as well. Because of the words in the Pasuk Yutes of Im Hashem Hasi Sischa Bi, that you... maybe the reason why you're chasing after me, David says, is because Hashem is the one that caused you to have these ill feelings about me. All right, pasukah. V'yatoh now al yipol dami arts, do not allow my blood to spill all over the ground. Mineged pnei Hashem, in front of God. Ki yatsa melech Yisrael levakesh es paros echad, that you, this king, you're chasing after this. This what Mesudas Sion says, it's a kinashchayra, chasing after this little bug. I'm a little mosquito. I'm a little gnat. Kashir yirdav hakore beharim. Just like some kings will be going after the kore in the mountains. Kore, the Mesudas Sion says, refers to a shame oaf. It's a type of birds, right? Apparently people enjoy hunting, right? Hunting for quail, like Dick Cheney, right? So that's what Shaul, I guess, used to do as well. He used to enjoy hunting for birds, for game. That was an enjoyable sport and an enjoyable pastime. So he says, what are you doing? You're chasing after me like I'm a little mosquito. I'm a nobody. It's like you're going after a bird. Like you're actually doing this for game, or doing this something which you are accustomed to do. It doesn't make any sense. And the Rashi, the very last two lines of this Rashi on this page, says it a little bit different, but it's the same idea. Mirdaf Acher Kneshar Ophos Yoshevel Beit Sehem. It's like you're chasing after these birds that they're sitting on their young, they're sitting on their eggs. What on earth are you doing? You're chasing after them. I'm just a little fly, a little bug. So we mentioned actually on Shabbos that the Yetzer Hara is comparable to a bug, to a zvuv, to a fly, it says in Brachot. And we mentioned, I won't say the whole example, that the idea of a fly is it comes back and back and back. You can take a newspaper and try to swat it, and you just miss, and it comes right back. Because unless you hit it really fast, really quick, and you're right on it, it's impossible. You can't stop it. It's going to keep coming back and coming back. So it could be that this is what Dovid is also telling Shaul. He says, you want to try to catch me. It's not so easy to catch me. I'm just like that little fly that just keeps circling around you. You keep trying to swat it, and it keeps landing right on your nose. And you keep swatting and swatting it, but it just does not go away. So you're going to try to capture me. You will be ineffective. You're not going to be, you won't be able to do it. Pasuk Chaf. Vayomer Shaul, so Shaul, listen to how Shaul responds. Chatasi, I sinned. I was wrong. See how long that lasts. Shuv b'ni David, please come back, my son. Kilo ara lochaod. I'm not going to do anything bad to you. I promise. Tachas asher yokra nafshi b'enecha hayom hazeh. Because you were yokar, which is a language of chashivas, you showed respect and you showed care and compassion to my soul today. You didn't kill me. And hine, behold, his Kalti, which is a lashon of tipshus, it says in Sudasiyah on the Gals. Foolish! The eshka harbe ma'od. Sudasiyah is like, shogeg, I was negligent, I was foolish, and I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done what I did. Please forgive me, just come back. We'll forget about this, like it never ever happened. Pasuk Chaf Bet. V'yan David, so do you think David said, oh, thank you, I'm going to come back and with your 3,000 armed soldiers? I don't think so. Vayan David Vayomer, he said, Hine Chanis Hamelech. Here is your spear, my dear king. Vayavor Echad Mehanorim Vayikocheha. So, if you want, I'm not going to hand it over to you. Why don't you get one of your Norim, a little guy? I don't even want one of your strong soldiers. One of your attendants to come, and then I will give it to him so you can get your spear back. And again, obviously the message was, this is your spear. I could have easily have given it to you straight through the ribs. V'ashem yoshiv l'ish esidkaso v'es emunaso. Let Hashem repay every single person according to their righteousness and according to their faithfulness. In other words, what you do to someone, that's what you're going to deserve back. So hopefully you'll be act righteous and you'll get righteousness back. Asher nesoncha Hashem hayom biyad, that Hashem placed you in my hands today. V'lo avisi l'shloch yadi mirshiach Hashem. However, v'lo avisi, so the Sion says, Lord, sisi, I did not wish to stretch out my hand against you. I let you live. I was nice. Pasuk Avdala dehini kasher gadol nashecha hayom hazeh ve'enayin, just as I was very nice to you today. Kain tigdal nashi ve'eni Hashem v'yatzilenu mikol ra. Mikol tzara, right. So too, let my nefesh, let myself become great in the eyes of Hashem, and I will be saved from all distress and all misfortunes. Leave me alone. I was nice to you, leave me alone. V'yomer Shaul, and the last pasuk which we'll see, which will be the conclusion of the parak, Shaul said, El David, Baruch atah b'ni David. He keeps calling him his kid, son. He said, blessed are you, my son. Gam aso tasev v'gam yochel tuchal. Which translated over here is, may you accomplish much and may you be very successful. V'yelch David l'darko. David went on his way. V'shaul shalom kol man. Shaul also went back to his place. If you look over here, we'll conclude on page 177. What does it mean when it says Gam aso taseh? So Shaul, interestingly, said when translating of may you accomplish much, the Targum Yonasan says that you will one day be king of Israel. So Shaul acknowledges that not only did you do good for me, but also one day you will take over the reign of king. One day. When will that one day be? We'll see eventually.